The latest news and analysis is brought to you every Monday to Thursday in the Israel Update with Anthony Reich, only on Chai FM.
Anthony Reich, Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Very good, thank you, Howard. How are you guys doing today?
Yep, excellent, thank you. But it has been a tense week in Israel, certainly from what we're reading with specifically at the Gaza border. What were the main events that took place over the weekend?
Well, we know that last week was fairly tense, and actually the tension really just escalated into the weekend. Let's just go through the events of the weekend step by step. I mean, there were these protests along the Gaza border, the 50th week of the March of Return protests along the Gaza border on Friday. Things were quite tense. About 8,000 Palestinian protesters on the Gaza side of the border. IDF forces were in action.
Right.
There were attempts to infiltrate the border. There were apparently two people who actually managed to get across the border who infiltrated into Israel, and troops were deployed into local communities in order to try to track them down. Ultimately, these two men were arrested, and they were found to be armed with knives and grenades and other weapons. So, you know, this is not a threat that is without any substance. In addition to that, during the day on Friday, there were clusters of explosive balloons that were carrying quite large objects. One was carrying a toy drone, others were carrying other objects, which landed in open fields in the area around the Gaza border. And as we know, that's really just a continuation of what we've seen during the course of last week, when these balloons, which are now carrying explosive devices rather than just incendiary devices, are being sent across the Gaza border. We understand during the clash, the clashes along the Gaza border, there were actually reports of two Palestinians who were killed by Israeli forces during those clashes. And so that kind of led to a further escalation in the situation. And during the course of Friday evening, there was actually a rocket that was launched from Gaza towards Israeli territory. Fortunately, the rocket did no damage and caused no injury, but it did solicit a response from the IDF, who once again attacked into Gaza and, you know, attacked various targets, locations within the Gaza Strip, Hamas training bases and other areas within the Gaza Strip, a naval commando base, and apparently there were some homes that were damaged that were nearby where these attacks took place. And that really carried over into Saturday, where once again on Saturday evening we saw code red sirens being sounded in the area around the Gaza Strip, and another rocket that was fired towards Israel. Fortunately, this one also landed in open area. It caused no damage, and it caused no injury either. But once again, the IDF responded by attacking targets within the Gaza Strip on Saturday evening. And so really this is just a tit-for-tat situation that seems to be going backwards and forwards. Fortunately, yesterday seemed to be a little calmer, and there were no reports of any attacks or either way from Israel or from the side of the Gaza Strip. But things remain very, very tense indeed. There was also additionally a report of one of the top Fatah officials in the Gaza Strip who managed to escape an assassination attempt, an attempt to take his life on Saturday. So that caused tension between the Palestinian factions themselves. And there were reports that the Qatari ambassador to Gaza, who would think that there was such a thing, but apparently there is, and he apparently was visiting in the Gaza Strip in order to try to somehow resolve some of the issues that Qatar is having, trying to get some more money into the Gaza Strip. So overall, lots and lots of tension and many, many activities going on backwards and forwards there, which cause, you know, a lack of stability in the entire area.
And what do we think is going to happen during the course of the week?
Very, very difficult for us to say, and it's also very difficult for us to say exactly who was responsible for firing those rockets. You know, we think automatically that it's Hamas. It might not necessarily be the case. We are hearing reports overall, just as a general rule, that Hamas is eager to try to avoid a direct conflict with Israel at this time. I know that it's difficult for us to believe that when we see these clashes going on, 8,000 people turn up along the Gaza border, people trying to break through the border, people succeeding in breaking through the border, missiles and rockets being fired. It doesn't seem as if though Hamas is intent on keeping the peace, and yet this is really the message that we're getting. So I think that efforts are going to continue, particularly from the Egyptian side, to somehow try to calm the situation. I think that Israel is trying to also respond to the particular threats that are issued, any particular rocket attacks, any particular attacks that are coming from the Gaza side are going to be responded to. But I don't think Israel has the appetite right now to necessarily get involved in an extended operation unless there is no choice in the situation, which I guess is the way that Israel usually acts towards these things in any event.
And sadly, no doubt we'll be speaking about this later during the week. There's been reports of infighting within the Blue and White coalition as they lose ground in the polls to Likud. Do we know what the points of disagreement are within this new party?
Well, apparently there has been a report that says that the teams of Yair Lapid and Benny Gantz have been disagreeing over the fact that the party has actually been declining in the polls in recent days, and the latest opinion polls show that they've lost 3 seats to the Likud, even though they still happen to maintain the lead in the opinion polls, but it's a much reduced lead now. And so they're apparently, this fact that they're losing popularity within the polls has caused some infighting within the Blue and White coalition. I've always said, and I think that you've agreed with me on this, that I sense that as we get nearer to the election, that the Blue and White team are probably going to lose ground to the Likud because of various factors, including the fact that now people are starting to think about a vote for Benny Gantz actually is a vote for Yair Lapid as prime minister, given the fact that they've entered into this power-sharing arrangement where half of the period Gantz will be prime minister and half of the period Yair Lapid would be prime minister. And I think in fairness, if Yair Lapid had been standing on his own, he wouldn't look nearly as much of a prime ministerial candidate as he now does as part of the Benny Gantz team that has come together under this Blue and White coalition flag. So when you vote for the Blue and White, you're voting not only for Benny Gantz as prime minister, and he seems very prime ministerial and he seems a very convincing person to vote for as prime minister of Israel, as opposed to Yair Lapid, who I think many people are less convinced by, and yet he will nevertheless be part of the team and also be prime minister for half the period of the next Knesset. And so I think that this is beginning to get to people, to people thinking about this fact. And it's interesting that the Blue and White team is really promoting Gantz more and more, because it just seems as if though in the public eye, he seems more convincing as the prime ministerial candidate. So I think now that people are starting to understand a little bit more about what their platform involves and what the individuals involved are, and by the way, the fact that there might be major disagreements within the governing coalition even before they start to form the coalition of other parties that will inevitably need to join the government in order to get past the 61 seats that are required to form a government. So all of these things are really giving rise to complications. I think ultimately, though, the view remains that even if the Blue and White coalition succeed in winning the highest number of seats in the Knesset, something which we think, according to the opinion polls at the moment, is likely, but which may not ultimately be the case, they are apparently still going to have quite a problem to actually form a government, to form a coalition, to get the necessary parties to come along to sit in a government with them. And so that remains still on Prime Minister Netanyahu to be the next prime minister, even if his Likud party doesn't get the highest number of seats in the Knesset.
What's interesting to me is clearly there was a power, the discussion between these two parties with Benny Gantz and Yair Lapid, that negotiation I think went completely the wrong way, because as far as I can understand from these polls, if Benny Gantz was the one that was being promoted as Prime Minister, they would possibly be in a better position. That means to me that the negotiation actually was somewhat skewed, perhaps because Yair Lapid is saying that, you know, look, I've been around a long time, I've run my own party, I've got the support. It needs to be me. But when that gets translated to voters, it clearly isn't the right decision.
I think that's right. I mean, look, we're talking about two people with huge egos. Mm. Yair Lapid, clearly the more senior politician, having been in the political game for longer than Benny Gantz. But Benny Gantz coming with a great deal of credibility from his time as Chief of General Staff of the IDF, and of course from his time as a senior general in the IDF, even before he took the highest office in the army. So he comes with a great deal of credibility, and he comes with a great deal of believability when he stands up and people talk to him. He comes, you know, he's obviously been involved in politics, albeit not as a politician, for a period of time while he was in the army, and that seems to show in terms of the way that he presents himself to the general public. Yair Lapid, less convincing. He comes from, you know, a family. I mean, people don't forget where he comes from. His family, his father was one of the most anti-religious politicians that Israel has ever seen, the late Tommy Lapid, who served many, many years as a member of Knesset. And people don't forget that Yair Lapid comes from that stock, even though he presents himself in an entirely different light than his father did. And of course, he's fully entitled to hold a different view from the one that his father held, but one always thinks that there may well be some influence. So, you know, there's a lot of antagonism from the religious parties towards him and towards what he might represent should he get into office and should he actually become Prime Minister in their power-sharing arrangement. So a lot of questions are now being asked about Yair Lapid. A lot of questions are being asked about Benny Gantz, in fairness, whether he doesn't really look like a Likud look-alike without Netanyahu. And, you know, once again, a lot of people saying the policies that Blue and White have put forward look very, very similar to Likud. So there are a lot of questions being asked, and I think now's the time that people are really beginning to delve a little bit deeper into exactly what Blue and White means. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, I see they're losing support quite rapidly.
Finally, Anthony, the Israeli press has been reporting on the decision by South African President Ramaphosa to downgrade the status of the South African embassy. How has this been received in Israel? What I find interesting is here I'm not even sure anybody cares. Even the Jewish community just seems to kind of roll their eyes and carry on, because they see, I mean, my view is, and it's a bit odd, is that this is going to affect South Africa negatively more than it's going to affect Israel. And it's like almost like a child that, you know, that old South African expression, Yay Vilmos, you know, do you want this? Well, you know, you'll deal with what happens.
Well, I think that the response to this comes from different quarters in different ways. I saw one report in the Israeli press where they actually said, as a result of this action, they feel that President Trump should impose sanctions on South Africa.
What?
Because this is kind of anti-Semitic and anti-Zionist, and this is the only real reason why Ramaphosa's government would wish to downgrade the South African embassy. It seems to run against the whole trend of, you know, world politics, and the fact that, you know, Ramaphosa is saying the reason that we're doing this is because we're supporting the Palestinian cause and because Israel's not being okay towards the Palestinians, and yet the rest of the world is saying, guys, the Palestinians are paying money that's being taken from the international community to pay terrorists, to pay people who undertake terror activities, and the United States has cut off the funding, and other countries around the world have all of a sudden finally realized that there is a lot of stuff that's not okay that's going on within the Palestinian community. And if the South African government is the one that's standing up and saying, oh, we are going to be the ones to support the Palestinian cause no matter what, and in support of that, we are actually going to downgrade the embassy, it seems really, really crazy. So I've seen that quite extreme view that's come out. Look, the former South African community living in Israel are very sad about this. A lot of people are concerned about what this might mean for relatives living in Israel, in South Africa, and their relationship with Israel going forward. A lot of them concerned about their own links with South Africa. A lot of them are very saddened about the fact that South Africa is really taking this view against Israel, which seems to be so unjustified. And many people did watch that meeting that took place in the Garden Shul, hosted by the Chief Rabbi, where Ramaphosa came along and made all of these positive statements about Israel's relationship with South Africa and South Africa's relationship with the Jews living there. And so this has really put a lot of that into context, and people are quite concerned. I think that's the best way for me to describe it.
Absolutely. Time is 8 o'clock.